The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Nau mai, hoki mai, ki a The Fold, e mihi nei, ko Duncan Grieve tōkingwa. This is my second big fancy New Zealand film presence, director now, in the past few weeks. It's Rachel House, who, just a crazy CV, largely known as an actor, but has directed theatre before, you know, roles in Eagle vs. Shark, in Boy, in Hunt for the Wilder People, in Thor, a big role in Moana, and as voice talent, and that her voice, which is very distracting to listen to it as an interviewer. So just basically like a first ballot Hall of Fame of our film community in New Zealand, but also someone who got their start in theatre and has directed there as well, so that when she came to direct her debut feature, The Mountain, you know, this was not foreign to her. The Mountain will be out by the time this comes out. I do urge you to go and see it, particularly if you've got kids. It's a really fun film to watch as an adult, but I went and saw it with my 10-year-old and 14-year-old, and the 10-year-old is basically the same age as the three leads, and there's that, you know, was just completely enthralled by it. It feels like it embodies a kind of a universal story, but through a very much an Aotearoa lens. And because Rachel has spent so much time acting with kids, coaching kids to act, and you can just see that she drew, like, there are three just newly minted stars in the three leads, four leads, including the Taranaki Moanga, but you already knew about that one. The three young leads just give incredible performances, and it's hard to imagine that many others could have got out of them what Rachel did. So we're largely talking about her career, but particularly about The Mountain, about what it's like to become a director, and the way that the story, which was originally written by Tom Furness, it sort of the way that the two of them sort of met in the middle, or the way that she picked up the baton in a way, and it turned into the film, which is now, you know, about how they released it, about how they, the, you know, filming down at Taranaki, what the sort of the protocols and the way that they made the relationship of the three and the journey to it, that is the core of the film, how that all worked out. And then we talk about, I guess, the way that the three leads embody different aspects of or sort of veins of New Zealand society, and the fact that it represents a more hopeful vision for, I guess, race relations than we've experienced this past summer. And then how it relates to the current moment in New Zealand sort of screen productions, where on some level it feels like things have never been brighter creatively, but also there's never been a darker cloud in terms of the funding of that. And Rachel's got some really interesting things to say about that. The interview happened at the end of the promotional cycle. She's just basically been on the road for over a week screening this film around the country. And I feel bad for her that she had to walk into The Fold with me with my sort of multi-clause long-ass question. So I don't know how much of that will stay in the edit, but I really went too big and too long. So apologies in advance to you, the listener, for that, and to Rachel for bombarding her on a Wednesday afternoon with that. But look, I really enjoyed the conversation, and I think most of the time she did too. Anyway, it was a really fun episode. This is Rachel House, director of The Mountain on the Fold. Tēnā koe, Rachel House, welcome to The Fold.
Tēnā koe, Duncan. I'm a fan of The Fold, so it's very nice to be here. I was just saying I'm a bit nervous because you seem to go quite deep with the people you speak to.
Well, I think my main problem is just sort of gushing a bit much, so which will be hard to avoid here.
Oh.
But we're recording this the day before, like the release of The Mountain, and I just kind of wanted to just get a little emotional register of how you are right now.
Well, I am a bit buggered. We have been on the road since, well, I went to Taranaki on the Sunday before the premiere, which was last Tuesday, and just to sort of ground myself. But it's been an incredible journey with the kids and their parents and our producers and the publicity team. And we've had a really lovely time connecting with community, which is so important. And I think, you know, I think a lot of those big films tend not to do. So it's, and this film is so very much about this country. And so it's been really lovely going into these smaller places. But yeah, it's been a lot. I think my thing is I do get quite socially anxious. So being around big groups of people every day has taken its toll. But it has. I was on Saturday when you came and saw it, I was literally hiding in the corner.
You did seem to be a little bit, but I think that. I felt like it actually kind of meant everyone could just relax into enjoying the film rather than feeling that there was some big sense of occasion.
Preferably. That's one of the things I dislike the most about those opening events, is that I feel that people, you know, they feel compelled to come up and give you their take on it immediately. And I think it's so much nicer if you get to go away and kind of have a think about it and see how it sits and then maybe say something if you want to. But I don't like making people feel pressured to give me some kind of compliment on the spot, especially if they're still, you know, processing it.
Yeah, ideally you sit with it a while. But I have to say, I do think that what you did with the release and having the premiere down at Taranaki and then doing screenings in each of your leads' hometowns, and then even the credit of it by a bunch of people and Rachel House, it has this sense of you almost wanting to explode it out to its constituent parts rather than kind of put yourself above it all. That's clearly quite intentional.
Very intentional. And I think probably there's more films that should do that. We it's all about audience. It really is. It's about sharing stories and collaborating even with audience. So I think it's important to ensure that it's acknowledged properly. Yeah, I got a bit of kickback for saying that. I was very insistent that we say include, you know, a film made by heaps of people, including me, because I sort of feel I don't understand why people say a film by one person, but it's never, a film can never be made by one person. It's really, I think, stupid.
No, I mean, it definitely, like, it gave it a very specific, it sets you up for the
good,
kind of
I'm
film
glad, I'm
get.
Glad that you felt that way, Duncan.
But all that notwithstanding, but while I was prepping for this, I reread a gorgeous interview that you did with Sam Brooks.
Oh, wow.
For the spin-off a few years ago now.
Yeah, we were drinking beers in the park.
Yeah.
Illegally.
It did. Well, he was trying to make out in the interview that it was legal, but I had a strong suspicion that couldn't have been so.
I don't think so.
It didn't vibe legal.
Yeah. only had two each.
Well, but there's some quotes in it which, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, were quite poignant. And I just wanted you to reflect on where you talked about when you first arrived down in Auckland from Whangarei, and that there was someone you didn't name who said that you weren't exactly a movie star and that directing was a bit beyond you.
Mm.
And I guess I just wondered if there was some sense of vindication here. You said a movie star who's just directed a movie.
Well, I mean, I suppose if there was vindication, because of course there was, it happened a while back. The other thing, though, is it does make you grateful. Like, for example, this morning I was just talking to my agent and he was saying, oh, this film that I was going off to do after this work that I'm doing here, and he was saying, oh, they're giving you a bigger role. And you know, that never gets old, that feeling of what? Why? That's nice, you know. So that, and I think of maybe if I hadn't been told those sorts of things, because it wasn't just one person, then, you know, I wouldn't be quite so grateful for where I am now.
I mean, it's interesting, right? Because you know, being told those things, it didn't put you off exactly, but it put you on a different path that might never have brought you here in some respects. Do you think those years acting, directing and working in, you know, with all of the of what theatre is as a community and a practice, you know, that it helped forge the way that you came into screens years later?
Well, I think what took over, I think like most young actors, I wanted to be famous. Most young actors do. Like they've got, that's what the dream is.
I've never heard one acknowledge it though.
Yeah, well, don't believe. If anyone says otherwise, they're not telling the truth, I think. But then you very quickly, you know, real life happens and gaining and, you know, looking for employment happens. And also the beauty of theatre is you go into these communities and you understand the importance of connecting with community. And then what took over for me was how important stories were. I think I learned a lot doing about my culture, doing Māori's stories, doing Māori theatre, and that took on a whole different purpose in terms of staying in this industry. And then it kind of just spreads out, I think, naturally, whether it be coaching, whether it be directing, whether it be writing. It's about sharing stories and you know, remembering that we are all kind of universally connected, but also that the differences we have, whether it be culturally or whatever beliefs, these are great things to hear and discover and learn about.
In film, it's obviously like, you know, and I think that there's a lot of, you know, you really feel that in this project in particular, which I want to kind of dig into. But in terms of that sort of story piece and sharing of it, the credit is that it's a story by Tom Furness and then was written by the pair of you. And I wondered if you could talk about that gestation, because it does feel like there's some kind of, I don't know, there's something that's in that transition or that is also kind of part of the film as it eventually appeared.
It happens all the time in this industry. And whenever I talk about it, I always feel, you know, like I'm doing something wrong. But honestly, it is a process that happens all the time with scripts. But I do want to say about Tom Furness's script, it was really great.
Yeah.
Like super adventurous, three little boys, and one of them was battling cancer. It was actually based on one of Tom's childhood friends who was going through the same thing. And I think this is what they kind of did when they were kids, him and his two mates. And this little friend of Tom's wanted to conquer a mountain. And I think when I read that, the mountain hadn't been named. And I also thought, well, here's a wonderful opportunity to name this mountain and allow this mountain to really fill the story and fill these characters. And with Taranaki, you know, the origin story being that these two friends of Taranaki's stopped him from going into the sea, I thought what a brilliant parallel it was, you know, for Sam, who I made the little boy into a little girl. But I also really wanted to talk about how we connect with Maunga rather than feel the need to conquer. And lots of my friends have been through this where they've written this wonderful script and then other people have come along and it's being rewritten.
But without that, it never gets made. You know, the thing is frozen in an amber and it's not touched, but it's also not realised.
Yeah, that's true. And it often scripts do get passed from one writer to another writer to another writer and then all the way back again. That happens as well. But yeah, it was just so when Taranaki was named, Bronco became the Bronco he was, particularly when it became a little girl trying to connect with her mountain. I thought, well, what's the scenario for a little girl to want to connect to her mountain is that she's being raised outside of her culture. And so in order to really include people in understanding what it is that she's yearning for, I needed to rewrite Bronco to be this little amazing super Māori kaitiaki. Yeah.
I mean, that's what it does feel like with those three leads, well, we'll talk about in a second, but also those three characters in terms of the way you've written them, that they represent three different facets of what young New Zealand can experience as growing up. And to have them all together and expressing their different upbringings and perspectives, but also having so much still in common, and that unifying sense of wonder and adventure and that little magic, you know, that feels like a thing that you must have really pressed into the script.
Yeah, because I think fundamentally that's what we all are here in this little country called Aotearoa.
Well, there's some of the stuff that as adults we can kind of, we can find a lot of tension in, and it's weird, like you see a similar group as kids and it feels so much more natural the way it's expressed. Was that sort of, again, intentional in terms of, I mean, you would have written it before the summer we've just had, but it on some level feels like a hopeful way of imagining what next generations might do with the same ingredients.
Yes. Sorry, ask me the question again.
It's not really a question.
No, because it was a big problem. It's a beautiful discourse, which I'm far more interested in hearing you talk about. But my thing is as well is I really want people to come and see this and kind of go through this themselves. I don't want to tell people how to feel. I want them to watch this story and maybe feel some things that they want to think about. And maybe, you know, compare it to maybe what's going on in the government and stuff.
Well, that's certainly yeah. What I came
wow,
with.
I'm really, yeah, I'm chickening out. But it's not that I'm chicken. I really do want this to feel like it's a story for all of us.
Yeah, you don't want to tell people.
This country.
And that's what certainly how I took away from it was the sense that, like, a lot of us will feel a relationship to one of those characters.
Definitely. And Tom Sainsbury texted me yesterday and said, I'm Mallory, FYI. And then I texted her back, that makes two of us. I mean, I feel pretty Mallory a lot.
Yeah. Mallory's a very, very sweet, sweet character. And, I mean, and they all are. You got these well, it's weird, right? Like, because I keep thinking, oh, how did you get these amazing young actors, which New Zealand seems to like
they're everywhere
pumping out.
Yeah,
but then at the same time I was like, well, that's probably rude because you directed them and I'm sure that the performances that you got from them weren't necessarily the ones they would have given on first contact. How does your experience, you know, coaching young actors, working with young actors on a bunch of films from your very first kind of screen experiences, you know, how did that feed into the environment you created to kind of coax what you got out of them? Because it is pretty extraordinary, I think.
Well, I think the great thing about being in this storytelling industry is that if you start closing yourself off, then you're not going to continue to do good work. And so I think you need to kind of retain a childlike quality to really do this work justice. So I don't know that I've ever grown up. So that's really handy to be working with kids because I'm always the biggest kid in the room. And I think that's kind of what I've also seen Taika be like that. I've seen lots of really great directors who work with young people a lot be that way. You've got to always create a sense of play. And in order to genuinely do that, you've got to have retained that yourself, I think.
I mean, obviously, those are your young leads. You had a very old one in Taranaki, the Maunga, credited as an actor, which connects to its status as a legal person, a huge meaning to the iwi and its rohe. Could you describe, like, how you went about engaging with that aspect of its status within the film and within, you know, the community where it sits?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we've always believed about Taranaki, but it all just, that all that legal stuff only just happened last year, which was a really big win and a wonderful step in the right direction, I think, in terms of, you know, understanding and acknowledging Indigenous knowledge. I whakapapa to iwi in Taranaki, Ngāti Mutunga and Te Ate Awa. And so really, that was the place I started. My kazi, Miriama Kamo, who's a journo too, she took me down there. I've only ever really explored my kaitahu side. So she took me to Taranaki and we just walked around and I connected with a kazi. And then that kazi connected me to a whole bunch of other kazis and then it began. It was pretty standard kazi stuff. it was a beautiful, it was just so incredibly fluid, I think, in regards to the process that occurred. I then got in contact with an organisation that quite a few of my kazis work with and for, called Tutama Wahine o Taranaki. They do this extraordinary community, really important work. Leone Pihima is also one of the heads there, and so, you know, what she's an extraordinary leader and academic. And they really offered to put a korowai around the project, and rather than asking people to read scripts, we decided we could put on a kind of little show. So we got four actors, adult actors, and the rest were adults, so just other adult actors, to play the roles and read the script through to any whānau from any of the iwi who wanted to come. So that was really cool. It was like Kura Forrester was there, Scotty Cotter, Cohen Holloway, Stephen Tamarapa, a bunch of people. And so it was a really beautiful, intimate reading with loads of people. And I think they really understood that we pose no threat with this story, and that what we were really doing is uplifting, continuing to uplift some of that Indigenous knowledge that we have.
It's such a beautiful way of sort of, I guess, explaining your intentions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and if you don't read scripts, trying to read a script for the first time must be like me in maths. You know, it looks so strange on the page, I would imagine. So yeah, it was really nice to just have a little sort of storytelling event.
Do you feel like you learnt things about the script through having something like that?
Oh yeah, okay. Particularly their laughter.
Yeah, right.
You know, where the laughter came in particular, but also what you know, what moved them, what it was that they responded to and related to. We had a big kōrero afterwards, and we got all of their feedback, and it was some of the greatest feedback. Often as you're doing these sorts of projects, you are inundated with feedback from loads of different people, and you kind of have to, you know, whittle down what is the most important feedback, and that certainly was for me.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable in public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
It's interesting, right? Because obviously there'll be some feedback that's wrong, you know,
100%.
And yet there'll be people who've got literal investments or feel like they've got a relationship to it. You know, how do you kind of how much of this first time role as director, and obviously your producers would have been part of this too, is almost like geopolitics and diplomacy trying to kind of get the thing through on your vision without upsetting all these various interests.
Yeah, it's that, and really, I really felt my producers really coming in around me. But I had to be really clear about what it was. What is it that? What is the vision here? What is it that? What is the story? What is the story here? Because there were loads of people telling us what they thought the story would be. There was always loads of people saying, you know, it's a kid's adventure film. It needs to be action-packed all the time, you know. And I was they really came around me and supported me in this sort of, you know, I set out, I suppose, to just tell a very gentle story. It didn't have to be wham-bam and, people almost dying all the time, falling off things. And, you know, I just wanted it to be much more really a kind of meditation on grief as well. That was something I said about it really early on. I think it's become more than that. I think it needed to become more than that.
But, it's hard sell to kids. Pretty much.
But I did want it to be much more about the relationships within the film, particularly the three kids and the maunga, the four relationships in the film, yeah.
Oh, I think you succeeded very well there, and I love the fact we saw it with I brought two of my daughters and another friend brought two kids, and I was sort of like, you know, watching it because they could, because of the nature of the screening, they were up and down and all over the place, but at the end they were absolutely thrilled with it. So
we've loved it, the kids just getting up and down. And
And you must have seen it because of the nature of the screenings you've had.
And kids are just, you know, but mostly they've been really engaged. Most of the time, the only time that they've been up and down is to go to the wharepaku, and then they've kind of run back. Yeah.
Free chips, free drinks, come on.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, you know, the screening of Taranaki, the premiere in Taranaki was so wonderful because everyone got given all these really delicious chips, and the first sort of 10 minutes was just for everyone this sound of crunching chips, which is very, you know, it's comforting actually. Yeah.
It's actually the second film I've seen the past few weeks after The Convert, which uses Reo Māori in quite a way that feels natural and accessible and I don't know, like somewhat evolved from a kind of a typical either subtitled or, you know, and it's not in a particularly binary way. And that is in large part because of the way it's written, but also performed by Bronco and then also expressed on screen and so on. Do you want to talk a bit about him? Because he's an incredible performance, but also just he feels like, this like an embodiment of this new generation that we're seeing rising within Māori.
Yeah, I mean, he is Bronco, more or less.
Terence
is definitely Bronco, more or less. And yes, exactly that. He is the new generation coming through. He is so at ease. You know, he is so at ease in our language and in our world, our worldview. He's such an incredible young person, and we were just with his school yesterday in Tauranga, and there's a whole school of them. You know what I mean? They're just extraordinary. I mean, it blows us all away. You know, my generation, it's so nourishing, and it's exciting. The future looks bright.
It does feel that way. Feels that way. And also just an incredible performance.
Oh, yeah.
He's electric on screen.
He really is.
This is kind of so obvious that it's trite to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, that it has a sort of kinship in some respects with the whimsy, and certainly the situating hard in the worldview of kind of a pre-adolescence, you know, like with Taika's films, notably Boy and Wilder People, and just that intense sense of
mine's like, not as funny.
Well, but also, like you said, it's not trying to be that. It's trying to have a sense of stillness and maybe a little bit more
definitely
wonder.
Definitely.
But it has that sense of this is how a kid is seeing the world and their obsessions and the you know, like all of the things that make a child's worldview different from an adult's. Does the fact that it came from Piki and that it had Taika as an EP, like, did that sort of help inform that sort of sense of kinship?
Are you asking me where I fit into that?
Yeah, well, because you have connections to those productions as well, you know?
Yeah.
And it's when you've got, like, credits as an actor but also as an acting coach, and, you know, Taika's got this enormous presence within New Zealand film that doesn't often necessarily leave room for other people's influence. And I guess I'm just curious about, you know, will we actually see more of Rachel House and in those movies maybe than history might have remembered potentially?
Well, are you asking me if I'm going to make more films like that?
Let's just go with that then.
Man, your brain. I love it.
No, it's no good.
No, it's so good, Duncan. I just was trying to figure out I love working with kids.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. It's pure joy.
And directing?
Directing kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love directing kids. Again, it's pure joy. There's the down, you know, the ups and downs are very clear, I think, as well. You know, if they're fearful about something, then they'll tell you. When adult actors are fearful of something, then it comes out in other ways.
What was the set like when, like, because so much of the action is just the three of them and they are off in the bush, or at least, you know, a long way from civilization in some respects. Like, could you keep a small set that allowed them to kind of grow into the performances?
Yeah. I mean, I there were some places that we were filming where we had to have a really small crew. But the thing is, because it's Aotearoa independent film, it's not a huge crew anyway, really. I mean, I guess there was about 50 or 60 of us all up. And that sounds like a lot, but it's not. The kids and all of the crew were so stunning. We grew to be a family. You know, the kids wanted to know everything about all the crew members, and the crew were very, very generous with the kids and loved interacting and engaging with the kids. I mean, we literally, as a crew, had to climb up mountains to film some of the time. So we were all pretty deeply connected. We had to, you know, stay in tents up on Pauakai in freezing cold conditions, sharing some of the most disgusting portaloos I've ever come across in my life, although I'm sure that was actually because of us, who knows. It was an extraordinary time that we had all together. We also had an exceptional acting coach called Carrie Green, who will be known to some as an actor, maybe known to some as a director. But she is a brilliant, brilliant talent, and she's very, very playful and worked incredibly well with the kids as well. So she really took the kids off when things were getting a bit hard. And often the time that takes the most is setting up cameras and lights and then when the kids come on, we've got this really small window to get it done. So, you know, there was a lot of time where the kids had to be offset and had to be entertained. Their parents as well were just phenomenal, and they've just committed to this project from the get-go. I can't believe it, how much they've given us, actually. And they've been a joy to be around as well. So you do, I think when you work with kids, it's imperative that you form a family. Otherwise it's not going to work as well. I'm sure it's been done before.
It's just so obvious in their performances.
Yeah,
you know, that they felt sort of held and safe and able. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a weird thing right now because we're talking the day before its release. Everyone I know who's seen it loves the film, and viewed from some angles, there's been a bit of a golden period for different aspects of New Zealand screen production. After the Party last year was quite extraordinary, and you know there is a sense that there's just some projects and some talents that are really getting a ride now. But then at the same time, you have you know, you mentioned Miriama Kamau before. You know, she's Sunday, the team that she's led for some years now, looks like it faces oblivion. You know, News Hub and a lot of three, you know, potentially completely disbanding. What is the mood? Because there's a paradox, right? You have this some incredible creative expressions, and yet the business side seems a total mess. Like, what is the mood out there like right now?
Well, I sort of feel, you know, it feels like it's happening a lot in this country, where we are being forced to kind of galvanize ourselves into action, and find different ways to retain our unique and important Aotearoa voices, you know. I feel really hopeful. There's some brilliant films coming out. Josephine Tafu's film, I've forgotten the name, I think When We Were Dangerous or something, a really great title, which has escaped my head currently. That's coming out soon. That was just over at South by Southwest. She just won a Best Narrative Director, Best New Director, something wonderful like that. Miki Mangasiva's film is coming out, starring the amazing Annabella Politaiva. I feel like, and of course Robin's fantastic TV series last year, I actually feel like with a lot of us in the industry, we've had enough of the crap. I feel like there's been a lot of crap being made for many, many, many years, and I feel like we're all kind of going, no, I've had enough. I actually want to tell some stories that aren't what we've been asked to do, and just a, you know, an actual reflection of my worldview and what's going on, what I feel is important enough to be told. Or, you know, with, I mean, just Robin's incredible performance, you know, and her really talking about how great it is to create these roles for older women that, you know, otherwise wouldn't happen for her, in her opinion. But I do think that we're all just kind of, we can't be, you know, cancelled. We can't be erased. And I feel like from, you know, what's currently happening, where people are trying to erase us on lots of different levels, we will rise up. And I feel like that's what we're all doing. And I am devastated for what's happened there, but I also think that's going to create something new as well.
Yeah, I think that.
What do you think?
I mean, I tend to have a similar view that these periods, when you're in the middle of them and you're just looking around, they can feel awful. And you know, and
of course, but change can feel so awful.
And like you said, I think there's a danger of over kind of just imagining that the past was just purely great. Like, I do think for a lot of time we spent a lot of money making a lot of shows that were really a commissioner guessing a little bit at what they thought would maximize ratings and therefore ad revenues, rather than this is a creative project that everyone involved has been burning to make. And I think that sort of risk aversion and let's just try and go for the biggest, broadest all the time actually, you know, paradoxically, had a lot of, you know, shrugging audiences and a lot of talent making stuff that they were okay with, and I'm sure that they, you know, they liked the check and they could convince themselves from a certain angle that it was a thing. But then a lot of the time it wasn't what they were, they felt like they were put on this earth to do. And I guess when, you know it when you see it, and that's why I just feel like, even now, like sort of 6 months on, it feels like everyone's still kind of talking about After the Party, because it had that kind of raw, almost raging sense of the story must come out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I'm so looking forward to asking Robin quite a few questions. But the first one I think I'd like to ask her is, how much feedback did you get? Because I think what happens a lot is there are too many voices telling you what to do and what to write, and it can kill it, especially in television. There's way too many voices telling you what you should be doing, and And I reckon it felt very much like that they had a very strong team who were able to ward off the 15 other people who wanted to have their say about how they thought the script was.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Which is something I've experienced, and it's hard, man. It's hard, especially when there's money to make the project at the end of it. Yeah.
And the money just guarantees your voice irrespective the money of whether.
The money guarantees that you'll get it made, and sometimes it becomes about just getting the thing made rather than getting the thing you really want to make made.
So in some respect, because, you know, there was the – you know, that project came out of a particular big pot of money that is now gone. And so it was less actually about the scale of its budget and more the fact that the budget allowed other mezzanine financiers out of the room. And so it could be just a singular project rather than, you know, that there's, it can feel like there's just a lot of different people contributing and that actually just waters it down. That sounds like it's your experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people who don't really know what they're talking about. People who haven't made film or who aren't, yeah. So it can be very frustrating. I think sadly, in some ways, and also cool in others, we're going to have to do a lot more co-productions with overseas people. But that doesn't mean that they have to be the big ones. It can mean, you know, smaller independent companies that we can come together with. I think we're going to have to, I think, particularly at the moment, yeah.
And you know, can you talk a bit about where you're heading or, you know, like in terms of the next few projects and, you know, if that kind of smaller but more harmonious approach versus something that might have a big glittering budget but actually is going to be a mess on the story side? Like is that where you'd like to see yourself head from here?
Yeah, I mean, I want to keep making our stories here. Most people in my position, though, I have to head over offshore to make some money.
Well, you can go and get the bag and then come back and make something small and beautiful in Aotearoa.
Totally.
All right. Well, this is your last interview of a long day. So, I think of the project for the time being. So, I just want to say thank you so much for coming up and giving this
Duncan.
Time.
Thanks, Duncan. Sorry I kept getting lost.
Oh, and honestly, it wasn't your fault.
But I really enjoyed your discourse. I thought it was very cool.
It was me tying my own self in knots. But thank you so much for coming up, Rachel. I've wanted this for a while. I'm really glad we got to do it.
Thanks so much, Duncan. Kia ora, ngā mihi.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.